as it learns the senses-shattering truth of how they stole Frasier's brain.
And hey, look at you! Long time no see! Welcome back! This is Tony Frasier, science fiction author, movie critic, and near genius, coming to you not quite live from the secret lab far underground. And hey, happy Halloween! You know, Halloween is my favorite holiday of all time, and there are a few reasons for that. You know, I grew up in the 60s, which was in the height of the real monster vogue. You know, we had the Munsters on TV, we had the Addams Family as TV shows. We also, you know, they had the whole hot rod thing with Big Daddy Roth drawing all those bizarro monsters who were driving hot rods. It was all about wacky monsters driving hot cars and dancing to rock and roll music back then. It was really a party. And besides that, you know, the other great thing about Halloween was that it combined so many great things. You know, it not only had monsters, but you also had candy, and you got to dress up in costumes. And for me personally, since my birthday is the day after Halloween, I also got lots of presents. So it was like a two-day holiday for me. It was like a holiday weekend. In fact, at least a couple of times, I actually had Halloween-themed birthday parties. I remember one year, we had a party in my dad's basement with you know, the friends invited over, people in costumes. I got some silly string and tried to make fake spider webs with it. It didn't work out very well, but we had, you know, we had a Halloween themed cake, and we had some other Halloweenish stuff, and it was in a smelly, musty, stinky basement. It was one of the best birthdays ever. But you know, for people other than me, the thing about Halloween is that it's a very ancient holiday. You know, it's Samhain. It's the harvest festival. It celebrates something very, very primitive in society. You know, summer dying out and winter coming on, and you know, all of the monsters are ancient archetypes, the vampires and the werewolves, and even the Frankenstein's monster is, you know, a few hundred years old, plus the archetype for him goes back ages as well. But here's the thing. On radio in the 20th century, the tradition has been very, very different. The tradition on radio has not been Samhain and vampires and ghouls and ghosts and witches and ancient demons. On radio, the tradition has been a science fiction tradition invading aliens from outer space. And I'm speaking, of course, of the 1938 Mercury Theater on the Air broadcast of The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. And, you know, we all know the story. It was probably one of the two most significant radio broadcasts in history, the other one being the Hindenburg, which actually may be more significant than The War of the Worlds, number one, because it helped inspire The War of the Worlds. Orson Welles reportedly played the Hindenburg broadcast to his cast to give them an idea of what he wanted it to sound like. And, of course, number two, because the Hindenburg broadcast had a catchphrase. It inspired a catchphrase. You know, whenever you hear anyone on a sitcom say, "Oh, the humanity," they're talking about the Hindenburg. Although kids today probably don't know that. There is no catchphrase from the War of the Worlds broadcast, unfortunately. I kind of wish there were. But we all know the story of the War of the Worlds broadcast, how Howard Koch, I'm not really sure how to pronounce his name, wrote this script that took the form of news bulletins. And people who tuned into the program, especially if they tuned in late, all they heard were these news bulletins where they were saying, you know, "We interrupt this program to bring you an important news bulletin from Grover's Mill, New Jersey." And it sounded like it was happening live, as it didn't have the kind of stagey feel of most radio dramas. And there were people who took it seriously, and there was, you know, panic in the streets and yada, yada, yada. There are people who say that the panic is actually didn't really happen the way, you know, the modern story makes us think it happened. It wasn't as big, it wasn't as widespread. It's kind of been blown out of proportion since by the press and just by, you know, the human tendency to inflate stories and exaggerate. But it was still a really significant event. It had a very large impact. For instance, in the Out of the Vault that I published this morning, there's a scene where Batman, and the story was originally published very, very shortly after the original broadcast, and was probably, you know, written and drawn even, you know, it was obviously written and drawn even before that, very close to the broadcast, when Batman flies his Batplane for the first time, and guys down in the streets are like, oh no, we're being invaded by Martians, because it was really prevalent in people's heads at that time. The effect of that broadcast. But the thing is, imagine, if you listen to the broadcast now, it doesn't sound all that scary, especially if you listen to the whole thing in one sitting, because, you know, they'll say something about, oh, we're going to bring out the National Guard, and all of a sudden, boom, the National Guard is there, and they're interviewing this guy who's a National Guard officer, and it's pretty funny because he's just going on and on about how the Martians will be no challenge at all, and this is, you know, not even, like, going to be a real battle. And then, like, 2 seconds later, they say, oh, and the entire unit has been wiped out. Every man and woman, every man in the unit's been killed. And it was just a devastating defeat. And, of course, you know there was no time for that battle to have actually waged. But imagine if you weren't listening to the whole thing. Imagine if you hadn't tuned in at the beginning of the broadcast and you just came in the middle and heard this.
Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of the stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmer's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain is conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Ah, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. Those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute. Something's happening. Some shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against the mirror. But then, there's a jet of flame springing from the mirror and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Oh, they're turning into flames. Oh, the field caught up by the woods of fires. There's gas tanks for the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
That's scary stuff right there. And I can imagine why people would have been terrified by that. But you know, there were other versions of the War of the Worlds that have also become radio traditions in the years since. And we'll talk about some of those right after this word from our sponsor.
It's here. Yes, it's here. A brand new, exciting new premium in every package of Kellogg's Pep. And it's waiting for you right this instant at your grocery store.
That's right, boys and girls. In every box of Kellogg's Pep, there's a magic moving picture eye. The magic eye is a gleaming plastic disc. And right in the center, there's an exciting picture. When you tilt the magic eye back and forth, the picture actually starts moving. They're pictures of planes, trains, and TV and movie stars like Tom Corbett and Bob Hope of Paramount Pictures and The Bob Hope Show.
Yes, sir. Every magic eye has a picture that's packed with famous people in action. You can collect as many as 16 different magic eyes. 16 different pictures altogether. So easy to get, too. There's one waiting for you now, free, at no extra cost, in every single package of Kellogg's Pep. You'd better start your collection today.
Remember, for your magic eye, ask Mom to buy P.E.P. Pep.
Hello, who's this Johnny Plugchick who's always electioneering about spark plugs?
Why, Senator, Johnny is a helpful hinter fighting Old Man Winter. He's the blithe reminder to wise motorists that now's the time to visit your Autolite spark plug dealer to get ready for the cold driving days ahead. Change the oil and grease. Put in antifreeze. Inspect the battery cable.
And check those important spark plugs, too.
Because when your spark plugs are right, your chances of starting, even in coldest weather, are better than ever.
And if my Autolite spark plug dealer finds my spark plugs need replacing, Harlow...
Why, if they're worn out, he'll recommend a set of the world-famous ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs, Senator. Like the amazing Autolite resistor spark plug. It's one of the greatest advancements in spark plugs for automotive use in the past 20 years. When you have a set installed in your car, you'll get double spark plug life, smoother engine performance, and quick starts as compared to spark plugs without a built-in resistor. So friends, visit your Autolite spark plug dealer soon. And remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
So, okay, when I was a teenager in Oklahoma City in the mid-70s, I heard that one of the local radio stations was going to broadcast the original War of the Worlds, which I had never heard. I had heard the legend, and I had a book by the guy who'd written the script, which was called The Panic Broadcast. I still have the book. And so I had read the script, but I never actually heard the broadcast, and I really wanted to, so I tuned into the radio station. The thing is that before they aired the Orson Welles version, they had something new that they wanted to air, and this was a rock opera version of The War of the Worlds by a guy named Jeff Wayne. And it had its good qualities. It starts out pretty good. It's narrated by Richard Burton, and so, you know, if anybody could come on, other than Orson Welles, if anybody could come on and just kind of make you feel uneasy with just the timbre of his voice, it would be Richard Burton. He comes on and begins to basically read the opening narration from the War of the Worlds novel, the first couple of paragraphs where they're talking about how the Martians are viewing us with envious eyes and planning to destroy us. And then this music comes in, and it's kind of cool. Not bad. The only problem was that it just keeps going and going and going. That opening number just repeats like that for like 9 or 10 minutes. It's for stoners, really. It takes a long, long time for stuff to happen. The music just keeps going on and on and on and on. You know, as the opening bit kind of fades out, and then they go into discovering the cylinder that's dropped in the field, and the end is unscrewing, and then the Martians come out and they attack, and you know, Richard Burton's talking to other people, the army's trying to fight the Martians, and the tripods are coming out and killing people, and it's anything left. But every time it changes, you're like, oh, something new is happening, good, and then the music will start, and it will just go on and on and on. And you know, then right in the middle you get this big rousing scene where the torpedo ship, the Thunderchild, attacks the tripod, and this is kind of the last gasp of human resistance as the Thunderchild is attacking, and this was the high point of the opera, quite frankly, right here.
Moving swiftly through the waters, cannons blazing as she came, brought a mighty vessel warlord crashing down in sheets of flame, sensing victory was nearing.
See, after that, that's kind of the last gasp of the human will to fight, and then after that the earth kind of dies, and then you just get like a whole second album. It was a two album rock opera, and that the Thunderchild came at the end of the first album. The whole second album is, you know, the earth under Martian rule and anarchy and decay, and there's no excitement in it at all. It just, you would kind of, when it was on the radio, as I remember, I kind of got bored and tuned out after the Thunderchild thing, and I may have left the room. I may have actually turned the radio off, and then would, you know, occasionally came back and turned it on and would be like, oh my God, it's still going. And right there at the end, but then you know, then I turned it on and I was kind of excited because the music sounded like they were close to the end, And of course, that meant like 15 minutes from the end. But, and then you get this wonderful little NASA bit where after the Martians have all died out, then it like jumps to the present day or even to the near future, and you get this.
How about that, Bermuda?
Fantastic. Look at that dune field.
Hey, wait, I'm getting a no-go signal. Now I'm losing one of the craft. Hey, Bermuda, you getting it?
No, lost contact. A lot of dust blowing up there.
Because you see, mankind has gone to Mars, and now we've discovered them. It's like we're the invaders, and ooh. So, I don't know. I know a few people who remember this fondly, but I don't know anybody who would actually have any of them who would actually have the patience to sit down and try to listen to the whole thing all the way through. But it was a tradition there for a few years at least. It got played every year on Halloween night. But what really excited me last year, when I was hunting around old radio shows on Internet Archive, looking for Halloween stuff to play on Big Audio Wednesday last year, I found this other station in Buffalo, New York, in the early 70s. They apparently first did it in 1968, maybe, and then they came back and redid it in 71, did a variation on the 71 broadcast in 73, and then did another broadcast in 75. Station WKBW in Buffalo, New York, made their own version of the War of the Worlds. And what was significant about it was they didn't use the 1938 script. They kind of wrote their own script. They ad-libbed a lot of it, and they updated it and made it sound like it was happening in their own local area. So it starts out with you know, one of their DJs, and the clips I'm going to play are from the 1973 version, which they apparently only updated for 1973. They apparently only updated the very first part of the broadcast with the DJ and the music, because obviously what was popular in 68 and 71 was not what was top 40 in 73. So you have to, if you find the 73 version on Internet Archive, you have to kind of suffer through Cher singing Half Breed, which, yeah. But you also get to hear a little bit of cool Billy Preston, like this.
KB-15 and the Shane Show, and I advise you again that traffic on the Grand Island bridges has been halted to all except emergency vehicles. And please, no phone calls to our newsmen. Let the guys in the newsroom do their job. We'll get the information to you as soon as possible. Solid gold. This is Billy Preston from KB-15. Please excuse the interruption again. Here with a continuing news development and information you need is KB Newsman Ron Baskin.
All available firefighting equipment has been called to Grand Island, and much of the apparatus has already arrived there. The cause of the alarm is reportedly a large meteor that has struck in the vicinity of East River Road on the island. Several persons have been injured, and some are believed dead, although we have no confirmation on that. Details are still rather sketchy. We expect to hear from KB Newsmen who are already on their way to the scene.
Let me try that last one again. Yeah. This is the one I started on. Pardon me, folks. I'm a little shook up here. Stay tuned. Further developments continue on KB-15.
Entire first half of the program is just the DJ playing rock music, and every now and then he reads a little clip about, you know, explosions on Mars, a little news blurb. And then they get a live report that something significant has happened with the meteor crash, and so then the newsroom decides to take over live, and you really get the feeling of a live news broadcast where they're you know, you can hear the chaos in the background, and stuff is going crazy, and it's really quite unsettling when you're listening to this and hear them doing things like this.
Perhaps you can hear the sound that's coming from the crater. It's a pulsating sound. It's a high-pitched sound. I don't know exactly what it is at all. I don't know. I haven't got any idea.
The edge is coming. Move back. What? The edge is... Sir, would you move back, please?
Okay, I'm going to have to move back now. I'm going to have to...
.293 to .2586, Don Lancer. Don, are you all right?
Here we get him.
.293 to .2586, Don Lancer. Come in, please.
Can you pick him up?
.293 to .2586, Don Lancer. Are you all right? If you hear me, answer, please.
Harry, try him, Fagan.
This is .293 to .2587, Jim Fagan. .293 to .2587.
Can you get him?
No, I can't. This is 393 to 2587. Jim Fagan, come in, please, if you hear me.
Take a spot.
I mean, that's pretty cool. And then finally, the whole thing ends with one reporter on the rooftop, kind of witnessing all alone in the building and witnessing the destruction of humanity. The cool thing about the 1973 version is, the aliens win. There is no, you know, second half where the aliens end up, you know, dying from the common cold. It's crazy. No, the aliens win, and mankind dies. Which, you know, considering that we were in the middle of Watergate in 1973, you know, it was probably sounded like an improvement to a lot of people. Compelling stuff. And the thing is, when I read about, because even then, they did the 1938 version, and there was a panic. And then there were other radio stations that did the same thing. There was a radio station in Chile that did their own version of the broadcast in the 40s, and there was a panic. There was another radio station in Argentina or someplace that did their own version of the broadcast, and there was not only a panic, but when people found out it wasn't real, they attacked the radio station and burned it down and like killed 6 people. And then when they did this one in Buffalo, there was a panic. So you would think nobody in their right mind would try to do that today, and yet there are like 4 or 5 different radio stations around the country who are still doing that this year, today, as we speak, doing new versions of the War of the Worlds. Some of them are doing basically recreations of the 38 broadcast. Others are taking the WKBW approach and doing an actual modern, modernized version. WKNC in Raleigh, North Carolina is doing a modernized version, updated with their own local news staff, tonight, October 31st, 2009. That, my friends, is a Halloween tradition that has nothing to do with ghouls, witches, monsters, or werewolves. What the hell was that? Okay, something just shook the foundations of the secret lab, and something has to hit hard for me to hear it all the way down here. Hang on, let's go see... Come with me. Let's go see what's happening here. We're just going to, we're going to walk over here to the elevator and start it up here, and we'll ride up. Yeah, I have to apologize. It's a long elevator. It's got a long way to go. Music though, you know, that's Glenn Miller. Best Buy the other day looking for some big band stuff. Back while I was completely unemployed and I had lost my internet for a little while there, and I was listening to the same couple of Glenn Miller radio shows over and over again, and I really liked them, so I thought I would try to find a CD of the Glenn of some big band stuff. And I noticed that the CDs they had in Best Buy had Benny Goodman and Tommy Dorsey and those guys, but whenever they had a Glenn Miller song, it was always sounds of Glenn Miller. not really the Glenn Miller Orchestra. So I'm thinking that maybe Tex Beneke and Ray Everly had continued orchestras with the Glenn Miller sound, and I think Tex Beneke even had the Glenn Miller name on his orchestra, even though Glenn Miller had died during World War II. So maybe that's what it was. I don't know, but you know, I kind of would like to get some of the authentic recordings from the 40s. And we're here. So let's go out into the backyard here and see what happened. We'll just get the door. Ooh, it's a little chilly tonight, isn't it? It's spooky with the... Oh my gosh. Look at that, there's some kind of giant cylinder that's crash-landed right in the middle of the backyard. Probably would have made a bigger mess, but I haven't mowed the lawn in so yard that the grass kind of cushioned its fall. Oh, the end of it's unscrewing. Look, oh my gosh. It's unscrewing. It's the end. It's just like in the War of the Worlds. It's there's something inside it that's trying to get out. It's what is that? Oh no. It's just another alien garage band. They heard that damn Chuck Berry recording on the Voyager satellite and come here to try to become big stars. Oh god, I'm so sick of these alien musicians. Okay, I'm going back inside. No, guys, no, forget it. Just go home. No, phone home. Go away. Thank you. Okay, well, I will see you next time I see you, I guess, which will probably be in a very, very long time, but you take care of yourself, I'll try to take care of myself, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for visiting the Secret Lab. I am Tony Frazier. Take care.
X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling CQ, New York. Is there anyone on the air? Is there anyone on the air? Is there anyone? 2X2L.
I don't want it. The lights. Lights are all going out.